Sump City Radio, a Necromunda podcast, is best listened to with headphones for maximum quality and effect. The show may contain profanity and mature content, not suitable for Jews under the age of 14. Listener discretion is advised.
My t-shirt. Bit stiff. Boots. Oi! Stop pissing in my doorway. It isn't a public toilet.
Screw you! That's my bathroom. You just walked through.
It's my yard. Look, I've warned you. Shut off, or I'll call the enforcers.
Swivel, douchebag!
Really sanguine at you, you bastard. Fuck this. I'm running late again. So tired. Need recap in my veins. What's this? I can't believe my eyes. I must be dreaming. It's snowed in the under hive. What's this? What's this? The scum is everywhere. What stench? A foul smell in the air. Raw waste. Or is it just the hivers who aren't bathing? Everybody looks so crappy. Have I possibly gone daffy? Why do this? What's this? This small Jews throwing smoke grenades, corpse grinders eating heads, enforcers shooting ball guns, whoops, now the Jews are dead. There's blood and rust on every wall and sleep still in my eyes, but in my bones I give no fucks, I need recap inside. Oh look, what's this? A little recap shop. Oh balls, they're queuing round the block. Fuck this. I signal the barrister guy and tell him that my name is Eden Chris. Fuck this. At last, my drink. I grab it and I run through town, for I am harbour bound. But look, they're putting up the Christmas things, they've got electric lights on strings, and there's a smile on everyone. So now correct me if I'm wrong, this looks like fun.
Do my taxes pay for this?
Fuck this. There's monsters lurking in the hive, the nightmares never stop. There's cannibals and tentacles, and then there's cops on top. There's frequent screams, but now I know the station isn't far. And soon I hope I will receive a new book for Vansar. My drink, the stims, passes over my lips and down. It never felt this good before. This empty place inside me now is filling up. I simply cannot get enough. I need it for my show. I've got to know. What is this flavor I have found? What is this?
Oh, hey, Chris. I would say that is Sumatra, which is flavour of the month at Starbucks, incidentally. Did you get me one?
No.
Motherfucker! Fine, whilst driving by the mixing desk, would you press the intro button, please? No, not that one! The one next to it, the red one!
Sup, City Radio.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to a special festive broadcast from Sump City Radio. You join us today in the Sump City Radio Shack, located on the Rock Creek paved docks of Sump City Harbour, as we hang the last of our festive decorations. I, as always, am Hive Scum Steve, and with me is the kit-bashing wizard, Chris Underhiver Eden.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, we hadn't originally intended to put out an episode today, but we figured a good way to close out the solar cycle would be a retrospective of the year.
And it's been quite an interesting year at that, really. I mean, yep. Wow, what a time to start a podcast, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt it's kept us a few captive listeners, which has been handy. But at the same time, I think, it's been eventful, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've had the whole zombie plague thing going around, which is, I wouldn't say so much say a novelty for the Underhive, because, you know, it does occasionally happen, but I don't think it was what we were expecting to happen when we first started doing this.
No, absolutely not.
So, yeah, there has been a lot going on of that nature throughout this year, but, I mean, the actual year for the hobby of Necromunda itself, that has been a really good one, actually, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, no, definitely, man. I've just been blown away with kind of how they've grown the system and how the community's taking everything on board, and just, yeah,
more toys, more goodies.
So yeah, as I mentioned very quickly earlier on, this is going to be a special festive broadcast. So this isn't going to be like a full edition, and it's certainly not going to be the 6 hours that the last episode was. This is literally going to be, I think, the shortest episode that we'll ever do, because we're going to have a couple of interactions with show associates, because they're all here. They're all literally right there in the back room now, because we're having a Christmas party of sorts at the moment. The only person who isn't here, actually, to tell the truth, is Drake, who is currently still off in his adventures, but I think we can try and get a Vox call through to him later on if necessary, if we need to have a word from him. We've already got Cannabella here, who's doing her thing in the kitchen, making a big old festive meal for everyone, and I think she's roped Becky into helping her out with some stuff as well. And we will come back to that bit later on, just so I can get Becky doing it through the door. So I've got any... It's just off another. Okay, so what have we already been doing so far with everyone?
Right, we watched a Scutari remake of A Christmas Carol, which was interesting to say the least.
Yeah, Machine Spirit of Christmas Past, I think, was probably the wickedest looking one.
Yeah, I mean, a 16-foot tall metal skeleton, yeah, quite imposing.
And we've also been watching some older Archaeotech tapes as well. Was it his name? Bob Ross, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was... lots of happy little clouds everywhere.
Yeah, like Becky going on about, like, what the hell are trees? And it's like, there's a story for you. Let me tell you a story. So, yeah, we've had all that kind of stuff going on as well. And obviously, I think everyone's had a couple of drinks already, just letting loose at this point in time, because nobody's had to do any proper reports or anything that they've had to send in. So it's all just socializing at this point. Although we have all been tested before anyone says about that. Nobody's, you know, going to be biting anyone else today for, you know, zombie purposes. So we're all good. But with regards to the rest of the show, do I need to do an intro for this and say what's coming up? Or should we just get on with it?
Just crack on with it, man. Keep it nice and loose.
In which case, then, it's a pub tale coming up next.
In an effort to further engage with the local community, Sump City Radio placed a semi-functional servo skull with a tape recorder in a local drinking hole and offered a free drink to anyone who spares a moment to tell us their pub tales.
Please state your name, followed by your tale.
Yes, my name is Mr. Oldman, and this is the night before Sanguinala. It was the night before Sanguinala, and somewhere in the hive, there were scummers preparing by sharpening knives. Weapons were loaded and traps set with care, just in case the enforcers would dare to come there. Some scummers on chems had the best of ideas to ransack an orphanage whilst drinking some beers. The Jews were nestled all snug in their shack, tucked up under duvets made from tattered sacks. When the doors were kicked in and the scummers arrived, awoke with a start, the Jews feared for their lives. But one little Jew got hold of some comms and informed a good friend that something was wrong. Then out on the docks there arose such a clatter, lookouts sprang from their spots to see what was the matter. Tucked up by the window, outside they would glare, throw open the shutters and throw out a flare. And out the flare tumbled to the shadows below, illuminating the darkness with a bright orange glow. But away from their eyesight, what did appear? A large hoverboard pulled by cyber reindeer. The driver leapt off as quiet as a mouse, and nobody saw that it was Santa Claus. Klaus landed firmly, large weapon in hand. It was long and hard and of Vansar brand. And in his other, he fondled with poise a large swollen sack, the one filled with toys. More rapid than sheen birds, his reindeer they came, and he whistled and whispered and called them by name.
Now Simon, now Strudel, now Schnitzel und Bilbo, on Humper, on Jumper, on Leonard and Dildo. Wait on the roof, darlings, you must not be seen, while I slip inside and survey the scene.
So deploying his drop rig, he began to climb down. At the window he carefully peered and looked round. A ticking timepiece was next to a fire, and above hung a painting of some noble spire. But next to that, what he saw was quite crude. One of the scummers was beating a tube. Without thoughts of safety, he swung through the glass, and then shot his load into the sick scummer's arse. The scummer yelled out in between squeals of pain.
You've ruined my arsehole! I won't walk again! You attacked this Jew and showed no respect, and stopped being a sissy.
Then he snapped the scum's neck. Klaus turned to the Jew, who was a small boy, as he whipped out his sack to give him a toy. He moved through the shack, killing scummers so quick, he looked like the Vansar version of John Wick. With the scummers all dead, he gathered the Jews and sat them all down to give them the news.
I was already going to come here tonight. Then I heard Timmy's calm, and it gave me untried. If you're ever in trouble, there's no need to help. For if a child is in need, I will offer my help. So these toys are for you. But now it is late. So until the morning, I think you should wait.
Thus, with moderate trauma, the Jews went back to bed, whilst visions of dead bodies danced in their heads. Klaus looked around at the blood he had spilled, and thought that perhaps he should call the Corpse Guild. But as he picked up his comms, he paused and smiled, for it wasn't the Corpse Guild that he dialed.
Hello?
Hello? Cannonbella? Yes, it's Klaus here. I have quite a lot of fresh meat for you, dear.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and piled up his hoverboard with the bodies of jerks. And Klaus said something as he flew out of sight.
Merry Sanguinale to all, and to all a good night!
Please take this token to the bar for a free drink. Merry Christmas, and a happy new solar cycle to you.
That's all for now. We hope you enjoyed this chance to listen to some pub tales.
You're listening to Sump City Radio.
Okay, listeners, welcome back. And we thought that you might like that one. It reminds me actually of, who was it? Was it Spamuel that did the one that went up on the group? Or was it someone else?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so his little Christmas carol that he came up with for the Underhive as well. What we're going to do now is a special edition of Shooting the Shit.
It's time to shoot the shit.
So normally with Shooting the Shit, it's a case of we just talk about whatever it is that we fancy or whatever's going on at that particular point in time. But yeah, in this case, we decided that we wanted to do a bit of a retrospective, really.
It's been an amazing year. We started this kind of three hapless scummers just kind of taking the first job that came to us. Obviously, you found me on the streets and brought me in, which is really kind of you. And it's just grown and grown into something beyond what I'd ever expected, to be honest. I enjoy doing it. It's great fun. But the audience response has just been phenomenal. And
It was weird, really, wasn't it? Because we all had the same opinion when we started doing this, all three of us, that this was something that we wanted to do for ourselves. And we didn't really care what the kind of response was like to it. But I think, in all honesty, it's actually done pretty well. I mean, you could argue that perhaps some of it's circumstantial. I say some of it. A fair amount of it might be circumstantial, because we had this situation of there was one dedicated Necromunda podcast that was running when we decided that we were going to do this. And that was Chronicles of the Underhive. For anyone who's not listened to that, I believe you still can go and find those episodes if you want to go back and listen to those. And then we had the period where we even met Tony and met Tom, and we told them that we were making this. We intended to make this podcast. And then they had, I think, two more episodes after that, and that kind of overlapped with us. And I know that I went on their Christmas one, because we released in November our first episode, didn't we? And then I went on their Christmas one, and then we put out our December one. I think they were gone after that. So we had it where literally we became the only dedicated Necromunda podcast, or at least the only one I knew of. There was Eye of Horus as well, that was doing it every 3 months they were putting out an episode, something like that. But they also do tons of other stuff, don't they?
Yeah, they cover loads of different systems, yeah.
Yeah. So there was that. But yeah, at that time, we were literally the only Necromunda podcast. So I think that kind of helped to get a bit of interest for us. And then, of course, with the year that we've had following that, it's been a case of that a lot of people have been stuck inside. So I think that it's forced people to look for other ways to entertain themselves in a hobby-related fashion. So I think a lot more people might have turned towards podcasts, if that's a fair comment to make.
I mean, I think it's certainly a factor that we'd have to take into account. But I'd be interested to see once all of the kind of restrictions on movement and stuff are over, how much of the audience kind of sticks about and keeps listening. Hopefully, you know, a good percentage of them, because I like to think that we provide decent content.
Well, I think we've certainly lived up to our sort of our little mission statement kind of thing that we decided to make when we came up with the idea for the show, which was to make something that if you're in a room and you're interested in the hobby and you're listening to the podcast, we want something that you're not going to have other people in the room going, oh my God, that's so boring, will you turn that off? Because, you know, if you're interested in it, you want to keep listening to it. So that was at least the idea in my mind for when we created this, that I wanted to make it entertaining. And that kind of tied into the concepts that you and me came up with, you know, having all these characters. When I say characters, they're in the back room. They're not going to... they are characters, really, aren't they? They're such characters. But, yeah, all these people on the show with us and having them and all their crazy antics that they get up to and actually transmitting that information out to an audience. And... yeah, I think it's certainly stuck true to that. I think it's been entertaining, if nothing else.
Oh, absolutely. To be honest, it's been good for me, keep me busy and give me something to do, because, I mean, I've made no secret of it. This situation's decimated my bloody industry, so I've not worked for, 10 months or something now, longer. So this has just been a nice little focus for me. And having people kind of feedback how much they've enjoyed, it's been a real lift.
Well, that's it as well, isn't it? I mean, I think that we've had an amount of feedback now which has clarified for me that it's not just my personal belief that the show is a decent quality, and I think that's across a number of different factors, like the what we cover, the way in which it's covered, the different approaches that we have, the entertainment value, the quality of the actual podcast itself from like a sound production point of view. So many different people have actually said that it is good. And I know that you're the same as me, because we both come from that kind of weird artistic background of we don't really have 100% faith in what it is that we do. We're not, so we don't have that bravado behind it, if you see what I mean. And to get that sort of reinforcement from other people, it just kind of makes us genuinely believe in what we're doing.
Oh no, yeah, I'm talking out my butt here, right? Yeah. I shit my pants every time we drop an episode and think, is it going to be well received? Are people going to like it? Especially when we're trying new things out, or we've got new kind of show associates or guests on, and you never really know. But month after month, episode after episode, people have just come back and said they enjoy it, and you know what I mean, pointed out things that I never thought would get a mention, or do you know what I mean, or quoted lines from it that I've bloody forgot that we've even said.
Especially Michael Monks.
Yeah, I reckon when we come to the stats later, I think we can safely take a few thousand listens off just for Michael. I mean, people like Michael have made it amazing to do, because it's just, you know, I don't mind throwing this out into a void because I enjoy doing it and it's good fun, but every message we get back, every person that joins the community, everybody that, you know what I mean, quotes a character or whatever, it's just a nice little kind of endorphin kick or serotonin booster.
You're not wrong, and you're absolutely right, and I think that's kind of a point that I was trying to work towards, is that when we started this, we had ideas of what we wanted for the show, what we wanted it to be like for people to listen to, and we didn't necessarily know how people would react to it, because it was a very meta concept, really, isn't it? I mean, like, breaking so many we're on like 16 times walls or something like that, from the way that we sort of flow in and out of like talking about real things to not real things. And people have gone with it, though. That's the thing, that people just hopped on board with it, and it's created this absolutely fantastic community alongside the podcast of people that are... How to word this? We've just ended up with a whole group of people that are very dedicated to the podcast, but are genuinely nice people as well. And it's weird how we seem to have attracted just that type of people. Because, I mean, if you look at the hobby as a wider scope and include things like 40K as well, obviously with 40K, you go out there, podcasts are all over the place. There's all kinds of extra content for that hobby to enjoy in, which means that obviously it's a broader audience of people. So you get a wider type of people included in it. And the point that I'm therefore getting to is that you can end up with some quite undesirable people in those groups, and you don't have a choice in it. But the group that we've ended up with has just been this group of genuinely nice people, and we've just ended up with this sort of feedback loop of positivity as a result of it.
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest kind of bonuses from doing it, I mean, don't get us wrong, it's great to have the community, it's great to do the show, but it's been the actual friends I've made through it. And yeah. I don't want to sound like a Billy No Mate, but I mean, just through connecting, through messages, sharing work, you know what I mean, maybe doing interviews, but I mean, obviously yourself, Simon, Carl, Leonard, and so many more that I've just clicked with and actually kind of communicate with pretty much on a daily basis. And yeah. Do you know what I mean? I've come to actually care about, and it's really nice.
I could say really... the same thing as well. I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, like, obviously this year's been difficult for everyone, but this year's also been difficult because we literally started the podcast just before Del got diagnosed with cancer as well. So obviously that's been like the podcast has been going alongside that happening. So it's kind of worked its way in there as a thing that just gets reported occasionally. But people have been so good with it as well. And yeah, we've just had so many people genuinely giving a shit about what's been going on with it, you know, and it's been really touching and nice to have that kind of communication. And in fact, I'll grab Del and edit in a word with her later on about it here. Hey listeners, I'm back again. So yeah, as I said I was going to do, I've now got Del with me, and I thought we'd have a quick word with her. So yeah, hello.
So, hey everybody.
So yeah, we're in the middle at the moment at this point of the show with me and Chris talking about how the podcast developed and how we've ended up with this kind of community, and how alongside the podcast, from pretty much almost as soon as we started it, we had to deal with you being diagnosed with cancer.
Yay!
Yeah, super fun times.
As if this year wasn't bad enough.
Yeah.
Have a nice little seasoning of cancer on top of it.
Yeah.
Hooray!
So, we were talking about the community, and I know that you've had people talking to you about this from the podcast itself, or other from the community listening to the podcast.
Dude, it's been absolutely incredible. Like, I'm just really grateful. Like, so many people have just reached out or even sent you little notes just saying, "Tell Del, wish you for the best."
No, and
all those bits and bobs. And a few other people have just been, you know, sending me messages and chatting away with me through Facebook just independently. And it's been lovely. You guys are lovely.
We keep telling them that as well.
Yeah. Really appreciate you. This community, everybody says their community is like the best community on the internet, but you guys already are the best community on the internet.
We've actually had some pretty good news very recently on this as well, haven't we?
Hell yeah! I got the all clear.
Yeah.
I finished my chemo at mid-November-ish. And I just had to have a blood test and another meeting with my oncologist, and they've said, yep, you're all good. We'll keep an eye on you, because I'm actually in two medical trials.
Yeah, I think I might mention that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But I took part in two medical trials to find out if surgery is a good option and if chemo is a good option. And I... in a random selection, I came up having the shitty end of the stick for both. It was like, yes, you're having surgery. Yes, you're having chemotherapy. But that's fine. Like they said that chemo would be the best idea anyway because of my oncotype, which is like the chance of it reoccurring. Mm. So I would never. Yeah, chemo was a pain in the ass, and it was difficult. And my body's definitely borne the brunt of it. But
getting a bit of that red phage in there.
Yeah, just a bit. But I would never want to change anything, I don't think. No. I don't think I would go back and go, no, not having chemo. Just simply because I've got it in the back of your mind all the time.
Well, it's that extra peace of mind, isn't it?
So. Yep. So now they've just gone, yep, all gone. Cancer free.
It's nice that they've actually finally said that. So we can now just worry about, like, corona and being allowed to go outside.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, though, with having chemotherapy during a really bad infection thing, you know, virus going around, like, part of me straight away was like, oh, great, I'm about to become immunocompromised. I'm also asthmatic. Yeah. That means if I get it, that's an extra dose of oh, fuck.
Yeah, which is why I've been very nervous every time I've had to leave the house to go and do shopping or something.
Hell yeah. But because everybody's got this big, nasty, scary virus, that means everybody has been focusing on infection control, which, you know, is yay.
Which everybody's was kind safe. Of useful.
Absolutely. Because when you're immunocompromised, even a cold can be really bad. So, you know, everybody's been extra careful about infections and shit. So
hopefully that's part of why we've had no troubles with it outside of, obviously, the...
I mean, I had a little bit of neutropenic.
Well, yeah, I think I mentioned that, actually, that you ended up spending a week in hospital.
Mm-hmm. So. Which wasn't, like, a virus or anything that I picked up. It was just my body was going, no. Like, early October. I mean, I had planned to do this big live stream, but thankfully...
Yeah, that's right. And to the people that supported that live stream community, thank you so much.
Like, I think in total, from the Facebook and from the Tiltify, we managed to rake in about 500 quid.
It's pretty good.
Which is way better than I expected.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is
more
down...
More than you was asking, wasn't it?
Yeah, a lot more. Yeah. It's most of it is down to this community. I mean, there were obviously a few of my friends and family that chipped in, but I do think that the vast majority was from you guys. So, yeah. You're legends, the lot of you. Thank you.
But yeah, so I think if anything, it's just further testament to, as we're about to continue talking with Chris in a moment when I hop back into the rest of the recording, that you guys are just awesome. So thank you very much for that. But it's been nice having a word with Dale directly to let us know that everything's great now with regards to no cancer. So we just focus on everything else and moving forward now.
Absolutely. So thank you very much. And thank you, Stephen and Chris, for letting me be part of your thing.
You're more than welcome. We've really needed you to do it. So it's been great. Thank you.
Well, it's given us both an outlet, hasn't it?
God,
it's given me something to look forward to doing and, you know, feeling
it's been such a laugh. It's like, for those of you that aren't Patreoners, you won't have heard the outtakes that we do for this as well. And you can tell how much fun we have doing this.
That's the three shovels thing.
No, the three shovel things. I haven't actually edited that one yet.
you for a treat.
Three spades.
Right. Oh, yeah, three spades.
But right, anyway, guys, I'm going to jump you back into the rest of the episode now.
Bye!
Because I'm not a person who has a massive social circle. I have a very restrictive social circle outside of a pandemic. Yeah, I've just had people reaching out and talking to me, and I've just found that I've ended up talking to them, and it's just been really nice, and that's all been off the back of creating this show. So yeah, there's that as well. But I feel that we've kind of gone away from another point that I was going to get to, which was the content that we've had in it. So I have got to throw out some massive thanks to Jess Lee for his help with it, because I think the War Room is probably one of the best parts of the show, and it's certainly the bit I think that gets a lot of audience engagement as well.
Oh no, absolutely. I think he's made that his own segment, really, in the way that kind of he approaches the rules and how to kind of get the most out of a gang or break a gang, even. I'm sure he'll admit that. But no, the feedback he gets personally is great and reassuring to see that you know, people are on board with that. Because I remember one of the first things we said was, we're not just going to sit with a rule book and read out of it. because you know, people can just buy the books and do that themselves. They don't need us to impart that information, you know, through another person. It's pointless, and it's just dead time on a podcast, really. Yeah. But when you can get a guy come in and say, if you put this with this, you get this, and it just makes people kind of, think outside of the formula of the way the book works.
I don't know if it's a sort of chicken-egg kind of situation of that we did it first or other people were already like it, but it's interesting to see in the group sometimes that we'll get comments from people going, oh yeah, this gang, I decided to do this kind of thing with it, and it's like, that's exactly the kind of thing that Jess Lee would do with it, and you have to wonder if it's his influence on these people, where they've then gone, oh yeah, I'm going to start thinking like this with the guys, how I can break the gangs now with these like really out there builds, incredibly dramatic.
I think there's just those computer brains out there that think like that, see the world like that. It's like some people hear music and see colours, you know, they've got that like synesthesia or whatever it's called. Yeah, and we were just really lucky to kind of, that one of your gaming group guys was Jess Lee, and he's one of those people that sees things like that. He sees the girl in the red dress, he doesn't see the cord.
That's it, yeah. So yeah, let's break down things a little bit more detail, because I know that certain people will be interested in this, and we have no problem in sharing this information. But for us, throughout this year, as we've gone on, we've had our app for Anchor, which is the service that we use for putting the podcast out to all the different places that you guys go and get it from. And it's been great for us to sort of watch these stats as they roll in. Like, literally, we'll put an episode up, and within the space of, like, I don't know, a couple of hours, we've got over like 200 listens on it, or at least that's how it very quickly ended up being. So I've actually collected a load of stats from Anchor itself so that we can share this with you. So hopefully someone's going to find this interesting. But currently at the moment, as of when I pulled these stats up a couple of hours ago, we're on 35.3k listens across the entire amount of content that we've currently put out. So that's not even including this episode before it goes live, you know. That's a crazy number, isn't it? I mean, we're looking at another 5,000 listens and we'll be hitting the magical 40k for a 40k related podcast.
Yeah, that's
you know?
When we retire the podcast and just leave it at that, I think.
Yeah. I think that'll be like our next big milestone, really, wouldn't it, if we hit 40k listens. But yeah. This is the thing as well. When we released episode 9 as a two-part episode, I said, didn't I, Chris, that it was going to be this situation that would go really weird and occur where I bet we'll end up with part two getting more listens than part one for some reason. And it's happened eventually. It didn't start off that way, but it has crept up. So currently for episode 9, part one, we're on 1,093 listens. For episode 2, we're on 1,159 listens.
Yeah, so we've got like nearly 60... people who've decided to listen to the second half without listening to the first half.
it's weird, isn't it? I'll quickly whiz through some of the numbers and I'll sort of rough them out a little bit here and there. But episode 8, 2,695. Episode 7, 3,200 and something. Episode 6 was 3,000 plus. Episode 5 was 4,182 listens. And episode 4 was 3,775 listens. Now, weirdly, if you then look at episode 3, which is 4,403, we've got a weird thing where the episodes have fallen out of the order, because as you'd expect, if you go back and listen from the beginning, episode 1 ends up with the most listens and the most recent one the least by comparison, and that works apart from episode 4 and 5. Episode 5 has jumped ahead of 4, and I don't know why, because I really like episode 4. That was Hive-Aid.
Yeah, and when you consider episode 3 was 4,000.
Yeah, 4,400 listens. Yeah.
It's just like, no, people don't like episode 4 for whatever reason. It's fair enough, I guess.
Yeah. So,
start of lockdown, if you look at the date of that. Us anyway over here, so I wonder if there was some kind of
March and April, so yeah, maybe that's it, because March was literally just when it was all kicking off, so I don't feel that. So yeah, if you're listening to this now and you've joined us like midway through the lockdown, do me a favour, go back and listen to episode 4 just so we can bump the numbers back up and re-establish the order, because it's making me crazy seeing it like that. Episode 3, 4,400 listens. Episode 2, 5,034. Episode 1, 5,288 listens. So obviously it's the one with the most listens to date. So yeah, as you can see, that's how it's broken down into 35.3k listens. Now this was interesting as well. We got to see the geographic regions for our audience. So with the vast majority of 39% being in the United Kingdom, close behind we've got 30% of our listeners are in the United States, 8% Australia, 4% Canada, Sweden 4%, Germany at 3%, Spain 3%, and then everything else is less than 1%. But this is just all the other countries, and I will speed this up potentially. Spain, Belgium, Netherlands, France, Finland, Japan, Hungary, Ukraine, Czechia, Puerto Rico, Slovenia, South Africa, Slovakia, Oman, Singapore, Greece, Saudi Arabia, Thailand, Philippines, Indonesia, Lithuania, Cuba, Iran, Malta, Denmark, New Zealand, Poland, Ireland, Norway, Italy, Austria, South Korea, Russia, Iceland, Portugal, Brazil, Mexico, India, Switzerland, Romania, United Arab Emirates, Taiwan, Colombia, Republic of Lithuania, Vietnam, US Virgin Islands, Guernsey, oh my god, there's more, Belarus, Hong Kong, Israel and Egypt. I can't believe that we've ended up with that many places listening to our podcast, and I've got to say, though, considering it's under 1%, it's probably just where someone's just randomly found the podcast and listened to it rather than it actually being content that they're interested in. Although, I don't know, maybe it is. But it's still crazy, isn't it, that, you know, thinking back to a year ago when we started this, I didn't think we'd be getting people across the entire globe listening to this.
Oh, absolutely not. No, the idea that it's got any appeal to somebody from Qatar is pretty crazy, to be fair. Or just, yeah, one random person in Puerto Rico is just sitting listening to it. But if you are, drop us a message. Let us know. If you're that one person from that country, or two or three, whatever, because it's under 1% of the entire
listen. Yeah, under
1%,
but,
yeah, it'd be cool to hear from you, because we hear quite often from European, American and Australian listeners, as obviously as well as UK listeners. It would be nice to hear from some of these other countries.
I think Leonard's probably got a lot to do with the European area as well, because I think he's plugged it to like everyone possible within his area. So that probably is in Sweden that he's in, isn't it?
It's Sweden, yeah.
Yeah, that'll explain the 4% in Sweden. So, so there's that. Then we've got the demographic of our listeners and what kind of platform they use as well, which is kind of interesting to me. Hopefully it is to other people as well. Spotify at 37%, Apple Podcasts at 33%. That's probably the most obvious ones. And then other falls under 9%. We've got Podcast Addict, which I didn't even realise that we put out to at 4%. Castbox 4% and Podbean at 3% as well. Google Podcasts 3%, Pocket Cast 2%, and then Anchor, of course, which is our actual service provider, which is 2%. So, again, interesting stuff there, as far as I'm concerned. And this was the other one as well, which I thought was quite interesting, our age demographic. Now, if you was to take a stab at this, Chris, because I don't think you've got this up in front of you at the moment, have you? What do you think would be our age, like our target age demographic?
I can't lie, I've got the stats right in front of me, mate. All right. See, exactly. To be honest, it falls about where I would expect it to. Predominantly between like 28 and 44 would be where I would expect to get the listenership. What did surprise me is the 18 to 27, the listenership at that age. Because I know a lot of our kind of our humour comes from a specific generation, so you know, like people will quote like Red Dwarf or Monty Python or things, because it's stuff that we grew up with.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, the idea that we can appeal a slightly younger audience it's nice, because I mean they're the kind of the new blood who's going to be bringing in. I mean, you've got all your that I think was the highest demographics 35 to 44, which is our demographic, mine and yours. But, you know, they've probably played the original Necromunda. There's a lot of nostalgia involved in that. Any younger than that, any below that, I think it's really refreshing to see kind of the new blood coming into the hobby. I say that as a man who, I guess, would be considered new blood into the hobby, even though I'm 40 years old myself. Because, I didn't hobby before Necromunda. I dabbled as like younger, but yeah, this is the first time for me, really.
So yeah, I mean, that's the... Oh, there was one other statistic, actually. And this one's changed over time. And this is what it's currently at. I wish I'd actually had the sense to record this previously, but I know for a fact that this has changed. This is the gender of our listeners. We've got currently male sat at 86, which, you know, you kind of expect with this hobby. Female at 7%. Non-specific 4% and non-binary is 1%. So we've that's gone up. The non-binary, non-specific and female, they've all changed since we first started doing this show a year ago, because obviously I check these stats all the time, so I know for a fact that they've gone up. And that's great, as far as I'm concerned, the fact that we're getting a more diverse listenership. So, yeah, I'm loving that.
Oh, absolutely, man. The more the merrier for me, definitely.
So, yeah, that's all the stats that we've got for the show. And so, yeah, we did put a couple of questions in to sort of keep ourselves on track with stuff as well, just looking back retrospectively. So, favourite moments in the show that we've had so far, Chris?
Right, okay, so, tough one. Like, we've just been talking about how much we enjoyed everything. I think High Veered as an episode was probably a highlight.
Yeah.
That just seemed to get such an amazing response. It was really fun to do.
Yeah, go back and listen to episode 4.
But really, to go back to what I mentioned earlier, it's all the friends we've made throughout the show. That's been really good. And I mean, like, genuine, like, connections. So, I mean, there's a guy who I've started gaming with and talking with regularly, Pete. He was on last episode speaking about Orlocks.
I mean, yeah.
He only lives a couple of miles up the road from me, but if it wasn't through the podcast, I probably never would have met him.
Who else was it you found out about that's not far away from you as well, who's in our community group?
Yeah.
Is it Graham?
Oh, Graham Shirley. Yeah. I haven't actually met Graham yet. We've just interacted in the group. But it was Peter who first introduced me to Graham as a part of Newcastle Warlords, which is a local gaming group. And I just saw some of his cool miniatures at the time. But yeah, no, that's the highlight for me, without a doubt. I mean, yeah, there's been great things within the podcast itself. But just, yeah, the fact that I can now... You know, there's a good 10 people on my phone who weren't on there before, you know, like James, and I could go through all the names again, but yeah. Just everyone who you know you are, because I talk to you regularly, you know, and it's enriched my life on a meaningful level beyond kind of the community itself. It's been really great.
Sort of to that effect as well, I think one of my favourite points was kind of something that we would have done more with the show had it progressed, but it was when... what's his name? Who was it I did the RPG thing with for a couple of weeks?
I can't remember, mate, sorry.
Two seconds, I'll just look it up. And, did Underhive TV. What was his name? Did it, and then it all disappeared.
Is the channel still running? Because I can look for it.
Bill Harvett, that was it.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, it was one of those things that I wish that we'd been able to do more of, because it was a brilliant idea, but obviously being stuck in lockdown. One of the community members, Bill Harvett, came up with the idea to run Necromunda as an RPG, and we'd have it where one person uses the webcam to display the game that everyone's playing. Really fun thing to do, sort of keep people connected, and it was kind of a test trial where we did it for a couple of episodes, and of course there were several people across different time zones, so it didn't quite work out. I think we got about 3-4 sessions out of it. But it'd have been really cool if we'd have been able to get that going, and I would have liked to include that more in the show and do somehow work like more RPG like remote elements into the, whether it's with like just a community thing or actually part of the show itself. Yeah, that was a really cool thing that ended up happening as a result of the show. Other stuff for me, I think literally any time anyone's said something either in the community group or on the show itself where they've inspired an idea, and sometimes it's just the stupidest comments, like Jess Lee saying about Ogryns with grapnels, and you know, just putting that idea in my head of like a Batman equivalent of an Ogryn, thus Batgrin was born, you know. So we've got that. We've then got Community Works, where we've got Bajana Dali doing scrunts, and then that's taken off. And then I think literally any other point where someone's made me laugh during the show, so I think you've got a lot of responsibility for that one, Chris.
It's just my face that I can't help it, sorry.
well, apparently you've got a face for radio, because it works. But yeah, it's just so many like laughs that I've got out of this show. I just remember sitting here in hysterics with certain things. Oh, Hive, that's another thing, referring back to ideas that inspire us. It was just one thing you said, wasn't it, about Bob Geldof in, I think, episode 3, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it just inspired this whole thing. It spiraled off, and we had people like going, oh, let's do band lists for, you know, all the bands that attended the Hive A concert. And then we've got, I forget what his name was now, the guy who was printing off the 3D logos of like the Hive Aid and sending them out to everyone. And
guys design it. Obviously we had posters, we had people building sets and stages, like
So yeah, it's just like the inspiration that comes from just like the offhand. Oh, and all the artwork, of course. I can't believe I didn't even put that in the notes. All the artwork that we've had from people that's been inspired by the show. I think the first one was possibly from Panny, wasn't it? Panny Mauser. Where she did her artistic impression of Cannabella, and it was that kind of more corpse grindery, sort of wild barbarianish kind of look with the furs and the pet rat and the stuff like that. It's totally different in my mind to what mine was, but I loved it because of that, because it was her interpretation of what she thought Cannabella was like.
Yeah, it's been really cool seeing how people kind of see the voices in, like, the faces to go to the voices in their heads, because it just means that they kind of they live on a little somewhere else. It's not just that what we write down and then act out. It's like, yeah, they make it their own, and that's really cool.
And then, of course, again with the artwork, that's kind of gone in so many different directions as well. I mean, we had Michael Monks doing so many things. I mean, that thing that he's done where he's run with the Eightfold Harvest Lord having a butler that's all tentacles. I can't even remember the exact details of that episode and what it was that was said, but he ran with that and he's created models of it, and he'd made like a comic strip, didn't they, for like the Eightfold Harvest Lord having this kind of like compulsive obsession to have everything folded eight times, like his clothes and his newspaper, which he's got this like chaos beast essentially ironing his newspaper to fold it over eight times. It's just crazy stuff like that. I said in an episode flippantly as well, oh, Michael Monks draws a picture of an Ogryn in a porta potty off the back of, I think it was a war room conversation, and he went and did it as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just all the cool stuff like that. And then, of course, as you say, Hive Aid itself was just a blast to record, you know, getting all the bands in and everything like that. Getting actually guest vocalists in for working on that as well, if you go back and listen to the intro to it, if nothing else. And we had Kevin there for most of that episode as well, didn't we?
Yeah, it was really good fun. Like, yeah, having people on is really nice as well, and kind of getting their perspective of how the game and the universe works. It's always kind of enlightening, and yeah, it's just good to see how different people approach it.
Absolutely. I mean, having Leonard on was an absolute blast as well. I mean, he was so into getting down with what it is that we do on this show and breaking as many walls as possible.
No, yeah, it when someone can come on and say, you know what I mean, you've got these two idiots, you know what I mean, hosting a fictional radio show from a far future on another planet, but occasionally they're going to break that and then just talk about little toys and dice and game mechanics, and to be able to roll with that, it's not always, we don't, you know what I mean, we ask quite a lot of guests sometimes, I think, and when somebody can kind of embrace it as heartily as like Leonard or Kevin or whoever's been on, it makes it a whole lot easier and a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, as far as I say actual sort of guests for like Shoot the Shit segment go as well, having Ewan on from Legendary Games, that was a good one as well.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And other than that, say for favourite moments, I've got to say every time I go back and listen to stuff, I'm going back and I'm listening to all all of our show associates, that rabble that we've got in the back room, you know, so Cannabella, Blitzenkrieg, Klaus, Becky, Salacious Paul, you know, Drake, he's the latest one to come on board as well, you know, all of that crew. It's just I have such a laugh listening back to all the antics that they get up to.
Oh, to see how they've grown from like a note, you know what I mean, literally, like we need somebody to do a cookery section, or we need somebody to do like an agony ant section,
and of course before I forget her, because she'll tell me off, her Natomian Scrofulus as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, does anyone remember Pomwell Brassbolt as well? He was there for one episode, I think, one or two episodes.
Yeah.
There's a story there, but we'll cover that later on.
Oh no, I'm just saying how like kind of they've all gone from one note kind of caricatures to pretty much fully fleshed individual, you know what I mean, like we all have a good idea of who these characters are in our head now, like they live outside of us, which is cool.
So that's kind of like the show itself and the favorite things that we've had going on, but as we alluded to at the beginning of the show, the year that we've had for Necromunda as well, that's definitely worth going back over, because for me personally, this year has been absolutely crucial for where Necromunda's going, I think, because it's shown that there is so much scope for it. And it's mainly down to the House of Books, but let's just give you a quick list of stuff that we have had this year. And I'm expanding this ever so slightly, so it's not just like a year from December to December, it's like from when we started the show to now, so it's just over a year now. So in November, we had the Dark Uprising box set drop and the Book of Ruin, which was then followed by the Enforcer Subjugator models. We've also had House of Chains, House of Blades, House of Iron, House of Artifice they managed to squeeze in last minute this year as well. All the new champs and the prospects respectively for those. And then from Forge World we had like the Escher Champ weapons, the Escher Champs, the Rogue Doc and the Outlook, Doc Arachnos. And then even White Dwarf did a couple of things this year where we had like the gang raid scenarios. We had the Outlaw Brutes.
The Resurrection Rules.
Yeah, Resurrection Rules as well. I completely forgot to put that in the list. We've had two Tactics cards, I think, from the magazines as well over the space of the last
year. And we've still managed to squeeze in the last White Dwarf article this year with the going out with a big bang at the end of your campaign kind of end game scenarios, like for adding new rules to that, which will obviously have to come back at another time. But the fact that it's seen support across all the it's seen support from Forge World itself, from GW, and from White Dwarf, just really reassuring that they're in for the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, two important things to take away from it is that it shows the scope of everything moving forward, and secondly, that we're going to have content for a podcast. So
it's always nice to have stuff to talk about. Yeah. Definitely.
Otherwise, it would just be all that rabble in the back row. It does fall down most crucially to the House of Books that we've had for all the original six houses of associated with Necromunda. It's just taken the concept, especially, and this is from the point of view of someone who played the original as well. It just took the concept that was laid down with the basic outline of this is a bunch of bikers who are also miners, or this is a bunch of women, because it was very basic, their backstory back then, wasn't it? But it was, that in itself was enough to be an exciting thing, because it's like everything else in 40k, and you know, is it all space marines, it's all either faceless masks, or it's all got a very masculine feel to it, but we've got a bunch of badass like warrior women, like Amazons, and you know, that was a draw then, but they've just taken those concepts for it and they've run with it, and they've put in all this history and detail behind it in these books, and then they've expanded it with new models, and they've taken it in directions that previously I hadn't even contemplated that they would do. I think specifically I'm referring to House of Artifice and Iron as the most shocking ones, but even Chains and Blades, the rules that they brought in, the way that they did it, the versatility that they've had between the houses, and the way that's been shown, like with Blades, you've got all the chemicals that they can mix up. With Chains, you've got the gene enhancements for the Goliaths. These were things that I just didn't see coming, and I feel that they've just done it in such a good way.
Oh no, absolutely. I think the updates to the houses have been just really cool. The fleshing out of the lore, the kind of the expanding of the rules set, the way that they've identified each house uniquely and individually with their own kind of shtick, their own kind of twist and novelty, so that if you're coming in from another system or from scratch, you've never played a game, you can literally just look at the boxes and go, oh my god, they look cool. You know, big muscly beefcakes with spikes and chemical vials sticking out the back. That's my guys. Or the crazy gnarly biker looking dudes, or the, like you say, the Amazonian kind of neo cyberpunk murder bitches, or the crazy, creepy trench coat wearing bald. You know, there's just a little bit of something for anyone, pretty much. And yeah, the fact that they've fleshed out beyond just the aesthetic, that they've got this history, that they've got this kind of interconnectivity between the houses, how they're all reliant on each other, how they all kind of have to, it's like a symbiotic relationship where each one needs a little bit of something from the other, but it doesn't stop them fighting tooth and nail for any little advantage within. Yeah, it just gets richer and richer with every release, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think you're right, because it's building on top of each other, isn't it? Where you're sort of filling in all the background.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Simon actually said made a comment earlier about... He said he likes how they're getting in that kind of 2 minutes to midnight feeling for everyone. And if you're reading all of the House of Gangs, you see how they're all, like, perched perilously on like the edge of a cliff. Like they're just clinging on. They're doing really well at this specific thing. They've carved their own niche within the world, but it looks like everything's just about to blow up. So Vansar are just about to be called out for being tech heretics, you know. but all these like little crucial moments just feel like... And I'd replied, I said, it's almost like a microcosm of the 40K universe as a whole, where everyone's plowing forward, trying to kind of make their mark in the universe and eradicate everyone else, because it's the only way that one faction will survive is if everyone else dies. And they all have this power and this kind of this thing going for them. But at any moment, that could be taken away and it could just be obliterated and wiped from the universe. And that...
Yeah.
To manage that sense of like gang management, that small level stuff, and then the whole, well, you know, Necromunda could be glassed because the house and STC that, you know what I mean, that Lord Helmar's aware of, and yeah, has kept secret because he wants to benefit from the profits that Vansar make by selling their tech and obviously utilizing the tech itself. It's just really cool. Thematic setting.
Yeah, so I mean that's kind of taking notes specifically from Vansar, and it's worth pointing out that for the keen and observant listeners of ours, you'll have realised that I've actually really struggled to try, and I don't know why, it's really weird, but I've really struggled reading over the last year. It's just that my brain just tries to literally send me to sleep every time I try and sit down and read anything, which is why I've turned more towards audiobooks and things like that. So when the House of Artifice turned up a couple of days ago, I was like, right, I am actually really interested in learning what they're doing with Vansar now, so I am going to read this, and I'm about halfway through the fluff bit of the book now. But it's really good, and I'm really enjoying the details that they've padded out, because before, previously with the old version of Vansar, it was... they're basically Dune rip-offs, and they're really heavily into their tech, and that was about as deep as it got knowledge wise I think, for me at least. But yeah, there's so much more detail in there now, and I'm just really enjoying that, and I think it's helped my brain to go, maybe I should try and stay awake a bit more and go back to the other books and read all of their fluff pieces now. But yeah, as a sort of a secondary note to the House of books, I just wanted to chuck in there before they get completely overlooked, because I think people are trying, in a sense of non-inclusion, to sweep them away as quickly as they can. Corpse Grinders. I was so happy when that gang landed, not because they were ridiculously OP or whatever, but because they're basically the horror gang for Necromunda. That's how I picture them anyway. So that really connected, I think, with Corpse Grinders as a gang. But yeah, they are still a little bit broken, which I think is why people are trying to, you know, hush them away quickly.
I mean, I think they have the support, but yeah, Jesus Christ. I think that's why Goliath are so strong now. I think that's why House of Chains made Goliath so strong. I think that they're paying the price for Corpse Grinders being so easy to abuse. It's not that they're broken, because if you're not a dick, you can play a decent Corpse Grinder gang, have fun, your opponent can have fun. But if you just want to, you know what I mean, play between the gaps and break the rules and bend them in order to just mully your opponent, it's far too easy to do. But yeah, it's nice to see a new gang included, and I hope we see more of that, like we did with the Slave Ogrons. Because it's nice to say that they want to invent as well as kind of reinvent and reimagine. So yeah, the fact that we got a whole new gang is awesome and really reassuring, like, moving forward. Because although the House of books are amazing at expanding the current six and like main houses. I know lots of people still want to see Rathskins, they still want to see Scavvies, they still want to see Spirers, and no doubt all of those things will be touched on at some point in the future. But for me, it's the things that we haven't seen and the things that we could see as well. Like we mentioned some of the things that came out, you know what I mean, over the course of the year. Nobody was expecting a gang hideout. Nobody was expecting the specialist enforcer, the null. You know, the thing.
Oh, the one with the dog, yeah.
Or the Dr. Arachnos or whatever he's called, the many arms.
Yeah, that was completely out of left field.
No, and they just come from nowhere, and it's really cool and exciting to see that, you know, they're allowing the staff to invent stuff and just go, well, what about this? Why not try this? Which is why when they did Artifice and half of the community dropped a bollock over surfboards or grav cutters.
Yeah.
And then the other half were like, well, no, this is cool, the potential that it leads to, the you know, I feel sorry for that poor kind of guy who went up to his boss and went, what about if we give them like hoverboards? And he was like, yeah, I love the way you think, you're thinking outside of the box, you're doing really what you know what I mean? It's really fresh, it's cool, it's an interesting way of kind of...
Sorry, I just had this visual image in my head then of, like, as you say, this timid guy going, what about, like, hoverboards? And in an alternate universe, the person who's running that department is a member of certain forums, and he just slaps the guy across the face going, what are you fucking talking about? We're not giving them surfboards. Get back to your desk and do something more traditional now.
It's always fucking hoverboards with you, isn't it? Always, yeah. Every time. Hoverboards are the answer to everything.
But yeah, you're right. It's just taking it in so much more detail and different directions and expanding things. And it's just really cool.
Oh, for people who attempted to write in, I know Hovertech isn't new. That's not what I meant. I just meant the fact that they're taking risks and trying stuff that's
Remember what I said in the last episode to people about how, you know, hold your horses with the not being it part of the law. Yeah, get hold of the House of Artifice book and read that. And it pretty much cements it. So, to you, basically. But yeah, looking, as you said, we've touched upon like future stuff there as well. Okay, next year, 2021. Hopefully a better year for everyone, full stop anyway, if we can get this bloody zombie virus under control. But where do you think we're going to be going? I think the obvious thing to pick up on first is that we're going to see Cawdor and Dalak get their books out finally, and hopefully that'll be everyone sated for a while. But beyond that, what lies next?
Well, I know the first thing we can expect is... the reinforcements. Now, I know the image on the reinforcement at the minute just shows the Cawdor hunchback rat guy. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. And the Orlok female, the resin females. But I'm hoping that we get... And, you know, I don't mind if we don't, because I think the fact that they've caught up with themselves after the delays and everything that have been going on.
Yeah, speaking of which, bravo to anyone from Games Workshop listening here.
Yeah.
That was a really good move.
Absolute hats off to pulled it back so that we actually got Vansar before the end of the year. When and that means that they've caught up with themselves completely. At least as far as we're aware, everything that we knew we were going to get or thought we were going to get, they've managed to honour that, and that's just phenomenal. That's really impressive. But hoping that that reinforcement in quarter one could mean that we could see the other brutes that we haven't quite seen yet. Do you know what I mean? Like the Arachnarig, any extras for Vansar, any extra weapon packs that might be coming out for Orlok, any special, like a Dramatis Personae or whatever. It'd be really cool to see them come out in that window. Like I say, I'm not expecting that, but I've got my fingers crossed that we'll see some little surprises in there. Obviously we've got, we know the names, as we mentioned in the prior podcast, which is House of Faith and House of Shadows. Really excited to see what they do with Cawdor. Just totally can't call what they're going to do with Dalak.
Yeah.
And that excites me because I can't really pin it down beyond the obvious hints we've seen. The polymorphic assassins, the faceless men, you know.
Is that one line in the Vansar book that I read where it said something about, what is it, the Vansar tech to do with, is it gene something or other?
It's to stop rejection from implants.
That's
But they don't tell them why. it's a secret as
and
to what
like,
we need.
Oh, that's
got to
be like alluding to something that's going to happen in Dalak.
Again, it's these little Easter eggs that are dropped in there, just these little seeds. And whether they run with that or not, it doesn't matter. It gets you thinking and gets you kind. It just, like I say, it enriches that lore, that universe. But yeah, it's the big kind of the redacted thing in Quarter 4 that's got everybody like. Is it going to be Iselin? Is it going to be Ashwist? Is it going to be a completely new faction? Is it going to? That's beyond exciting for me.
And this shows you how much I'm actually am reading the fluff of Vansar at the moment. Didn't realise that it was a Vansar that created the Iselin.
Well, there you go. So it's going to have a little badge on there somewhere with the skull and spider legs.
So I suppose really the big shakeups are probably going to land end of 21, really 22, really. But I mean, that in itself is great because it means that for at least, another 2 years, we've easily got content covered for expanding Necromunda beyond what we're dealing with now.
Well, yeah, I mean, as long as people are playing and buying, I guess most importantly, that's the thing, it is a business. So if we're all supporting them and, picking up the gangs when they drop or the books when they drop or everything crossed for a boxed release next Christmas time, like next Quarter 4. That's what I'd really like to see, is whether it's an Ashwaste or an Iselin or whatever they go with, I'd love to see a new boxed set, because that seems to generate the most like excitement across the community, because obviously you'll probably get terrain or maybe vehicles, I don't know, maybe, but you know what I mean, and maybe a couple of new gangs or updated bits, and that's always cool. It tends to be pretty good value for money for most people. Anyway, apologies, New Zealand and Australia, who always get rammed up the arse with that one. But
No, absolutely right. I've got the same hopes as well. That I hope at the end of 21 we'll get another big box set, and it'll be like perhaps a gateway into something that we'll then have for 22. But something else that's worth noting out, because we did kind of just touch upon it on. I think there, with regards to the progress of Necromunda and online sales and things like that, they seem to have finally got either the correct amount of stock sorted out or the fact that they've put in limitations for the amount of cards that can be ordered. But if you go on to the Games Workshop website, as of this moment in time, you can still order the Vansar Tactics cards. So that's what, a week after the pre-order went up?
Yeah,
no,
which is unheard of
now?
I think apart from like the initial cards that you got with Escher and Goliath, that you bought for Escher and Goliath, I think, I don't know whether that was because the game hadn't picked up enough traction and kind of footfall at the time, or it was just that they weren't necessarily popular gangs, or that they printed too many, which led to them underprinting after that. But yeah, considering that was one of the biggest bones of contention within the hobby community, and I'd even seen comments of people said, "I'm done. I'm stopping collecting. I'm selling what I've got. I can't be bothered doing like chasing this artificial kind of scarcity," which shows that was never their intention. It wasn't a sales tactic. It wasn't a way to push something like to force like a fake limited edition status on something. It's just getting the manufacturing and distribution process right.
Getting it all balanced,
I think a lot of that is down to preventing scalpers with
Well, I think by doing that, they have shown to me, and I hope pretty much everyone else in the community and our listeners, that they are trying to sort this out, that they are genuinely wanting people to get what they want from the hobby moving forward. Because we've never really had a public statement from Games Workshop going, yeah, we realised that the stock levels were a bit fucked up. We're sorry about that. We're trying to sort things out. But at least in their actions, it's doing that. I mean, that is right, isn't it? I've not missed a message somewhere where they've said, whoops, stock levels got screwed up a bit, but sorry.
I think the one thing, like I've heard people say, is if they've spoken to somebody who knows something. But I've never interacted with anyone kind of on that level who knows anything about distribution, like within the actual community itself. Not, oh, well, I worked for a big warehouse and we did. And everybody's a bloody expert when it comes down to it. But I've never heard any kind of official comment from the horse's mouth, so to speak. I've heard people who say they know people or they've spoken to people. But you've got to take that with a liberal pinch of salt, I think, because, I just don't know. That they were listening. I think they do care. I think they're a business, and judging by their profits last year, I think they want the money. I think that's, when they make a product, they want it to sell. They want to sell as many of it as they can. So the idea that they would kind of underprint or hold things back or put limited numbers on something on purpose just to make sure it's sold seems a little like counterintuitive to how a business works.
Yeah. So, as I say, rounding everything up then, I think we've got two aspects here. The hobby itself, I think it's positive moving forward, and I think that the year that we've had for it has actually been really good. I think we've had a load of really cool stuff come out this year. And as for the podcast itself, to everyone who's put in one of those 35.3k listens, thank you very much. It's been great producing this for everyone. It's been great working with Chris on it and all those ruffians in the back room. Adele, Beth, Rhea, Lucas, anyone who's put in any voice work for us, thank you very much. Oh, Tim, who did Dongo Raybarb, who might be coming up again in a pub tale at some point soon. Yeah, thank you very much for everything that they've all done. Everyone who's been part of the community over the last year, which is, as I say, it's been a blast just looking at all the stuff that people have posted in there.
Oh yeah, man. Anyone who's taken part in the competitions, anyone who's wrote a letter, anyone who's just dropped us a message privately or individually, like whether that's in support of Dell or kind of just asking a random question out of the blue, anyone who's posted pictures of their work or shared pictures of other people or supported another person in being able to find something or achieve something. Yeah, the community that's built up around it has just been phenomenal. So yeah, echoing exactly what Stephen said, thank you to everyone who's interacted in any way, got involved in Nectober.
Yeah, well, Nectober, yeah, as yeah. Well. That was the thing that we should have mentioned way earlier into this. That was a brilliant idea from Carl.
The amount of people that got involved and the quality of stuff that was submitted was phenomenal. And yeah, we really are going to have to collect all that into a big gallery and make a thing of it at some point, because that was some really incredible artists just kind of doing it for the love of doing it. And that's always the best.
Yeah. So I think what we're going to do at this point then, Chris, because I think we've touched upon everything nicely there, is we'll take a bit of a break, chuck in some adverts, probably for the Patreon. So yeah, go join our Patreon, patreon.com/somesuitradio. And we'll then get this lot in the back room sorted out, and we'll go on to your letters with a special edition of Question Time for all of them. So that's it. We'll see you in a bit.
Toss a crab to your DJ, some city of plenty, some city of plenty, whoa. Toss a crab to your DJ, some city of plenty.
Help support Some City Radio by heading over to our Patreon page. Patreon.com/Some City Radio. Help support the show and allow yourself to feel epic. Now, back to the studio.
Okay, so quiet everybody, please. Right, you'll notice that we're in the back room of the Some City Radio Shack now, surrounded by our colleagues who you've all come to know over the past year. And normally we would do our letters section, but this episode we've asked specifically for people to submit any questions they have for any of our colourful cast members. So to kick this off, I've got one for Natomi here. How do we even get weather in the hive? So Natomi.
That's actually a common misconception, that the atmospherics in the hive is actually weather. Weather is what happens to those outside the hive. Whereas atmospherics is a term that those of us inside the hive have come to use to describe the weather-like effects within the hive itself. It is more of an exact cause and effect science and less guesswork is involved than in true meteorology. Another way to answer this is to say that the temperatures and moisture levels, air quality, and the airflow from circulation fans is in a big enough environment with a whole bunch of other factors that can make some very convincing weather-like conditions down in the hive.
Very in-depth there, so I hope that answers the question. And a follow-on question here, what does a day in the life of Natomi look like?
Well, it's not...
Excuse me! Sorry!
I'm alright. Okay. Fucking hell, he's bigger than you think he is, isn't he?
He takes up a bit of space, yeah.
Yeah.
I have two chairs, believe me, one for each back!
Yeah. Right, mate. Well, honestly, it ain't what it used to be. In the old days, when I was dome running, although, to be fair, that was before some fecking Goliath tart caved me head in with a spud jacker. These days, it's just, well, it's sump life, isn't it? For me, that means waking up, sorting myself out, leaving my storage container house, heading over to the atmospheric station, ensuring I have a good cup-sized cup of recaf, and then poring over all of the readouts that we get to try and ascertain how the atmospherics are going to play out over the coming days, given any other information that we get. That's why we're so closely tied to Squaffulous and the news team, because a lot of events that are reported, like, for example, the burst coolant pipes, could lead to other atmospherics-related issues. A day full of that makes a couple of reports and then head down to drinking hole for a bit before crawling back home, and then it's just rinse and repeat from there, really.
And that's why I'm so closely tied to Natomi, because that girl can drink.
Yeah. I'd put a little bit more away than most people, to be fair. I reckon that might be the Lobo chip, though. It interferes with the signals in the brain to go, stop fucking drinking, you've had enough.
Doesn't explain how you're such a good fighter, though. That's always the best bit of the night.
No sense, no feeling, no mate, innit?
I feel that I cannot apologise on behalf of House Goliath for what happened with your chip, but at least I feel bad. I don't know if that makes any difference.
Oh, there's no hard feelings, mate. It's all right. It's all good. You know, I don't blame anyone responsible for anything that anybody in their ass does. It's all on them, isn't it?
I suppose it just comes down to sump life.
Yeah. You know, you're here, you've got to accept it, haven't you?
Sump life!
Yeah.
Who gave...
That's an in-joke, by the way.
Who gave Krieg marzipan? I told you, no marzipan for Krieg.
But I like Christmas cake.
Right, we've got one more question for you, Natomi, and then hopefully you'll get to give your voice a little bit of a rest. What are the chances of a white ash fall on the feast of the Emperor's Ascension? And I think that's a question on all of our lips, so...
Yeah. I mean, it's entirely dependent on which section of the Ive you're in, really. Sump City? Chances... They're extremely remote, I'm afraid. The manufactoriums above are going through a period of cool down at the moment, so there's a complete lack of ash about. Fucking hell, why?
Where did that little dog come from?
Right, anyway.
Hello, little dog.
Becky, I've told you not to bring strays in.
That's not a stray, that's my dog.
It's fucking cute, gotta say.
He is very small.
It's like the size of your foot. Anyway, what I was saying was probably more likely to get high precipitation levels and decreasing temperatures, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, and we've got one for Scrofius here as well, haven't we? So, Scrofius, how... I don't know, this is the thing, isn't it? Okay, anyway, how did you get named Scrofius? Did you lose a bet? That's the exact question.
Yeah, I felt a bit rude, but my parents were lowborn, almost illiterate. My father saw the name on a medical leaflet and thought it sounded posh. It could have been worse. If I'd have been a girl, my name would be Chlamydia Pile.
Yeah, legit. there's another one for you, Scrofulus, which is, I've heard that the Couriers Guild is recruiting to cope with demand and are boasting a massive 31% successful delivery rate. Is that true?
Why, it's true that they are currently hiring. I'd be wary of the lure of a high-protein diet. Some of those lads look a little crazy. I just don't trust people who pray too awful, personally.
What? The Couriers Guild?
Ah, I'm sorry. Too many drinks. You said Couriers Guild. I thought you said Corpse Guild. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, assuming they're talking about with all the freaking skulls we've got flying around doing parcel deliveries at the moment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I know that you personally, Stephen, have had some issues with your postal delivery.
Oh. I don't think it's the skulls, so I can't blame the actual delivery service itself. I think it's something to do with the processing beforehand, before they get hold of it, and it's literally just getting torn up in the actual processing machines.
Well, I just say, if you are tempted to go in for that kind of employment, maybe one of the good guys, and try your best to make sure those parcels get where they need to be.
Yeah, like Death Stranding. So...
Oh, now we've got one here for Drake.
He's not here, is he? So we're going to get him up on...
Can you get him up on the data slate? Is that...
Yeah, hang on then.
Hello, Drake Livingstone here. How can I help you?
Oh, hi, Drake. Sorry to bother you. I know you're doing really kind of... in-depth and...
I'm sorry, you're going to have to speak up. I can barely hear you. There's a lot of interference.
Drake, I'm sorry to interrupt your study, but we have a question here from one of the listeners.
Is that Mr. Eden?
It is, yes.
Hello, Chris, how are you?
Hello, Drake, how are you? Are you well?
Are you enjoying your festivities?
It's going pretty well so far, yeah. Yourself?
Yes, having a wonderful time here with the Scrunts.
Fantastic. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind answering a question that one of the listeners has sent in.
Yes, of course. Yes, go ahead.
Right, okay. Drake, which of your discovered species has been the most tender lover?
Well, now, you may expect me to say the velveteen flesh of the arrogant night whale or the voluptuous embrace of the eight-breasted great swallow, but the truth is a gentleman never tells.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Drake. Thank you very much. You enjoy the rest of your festivities, yeah?
If I don't see you beforehand, happy new solar cycle.
And to you, buddy. All the best. Take care.
Drake Livingstone out.
Well, there we go then. That was Drake. Yeah. He sounds like he had his hands full, probably with something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's best not to ask.
His hands full of him.
I got some for Blitz and Krieg here. Chris, do you want to read those?
All right, Blitz. Krieg, put the marzipan down. I've got questions for you. Right, okay, so you two guys, of all the denizens of the Underhive, who would you want to fight the most and why? Okay, you first.
Oh, that is a good question. I think Helmar himself. That would be very interesting to see how the ruler of Necromunda will handle himself in a fight.
That's a good answer, and a good question. Personally, a good old bare-knuckle fight with Cal Jericho. That bastard got his grubby mitts on the last Crystal Ripper Jack in a bidding war, and I'd never forgiven him for that. We have something of a gentleman's rivalry when it comes to collecting crystal figurines, and I was low on creds due to a bad wager on a pit fight. Son of a bitch sniped me at the last minute, and I ain't gonna lie, it still stings.
Yeah, he's quite precious about the figurines.
I don't want to talk about it, Krieg.
Yeah, neither do I.
Krieg, what's your top 10 fumbled players, it says?
Fumbled plays?
I think they're talking about that sport with the ball. What's it now? Blood ball? Murder bowl?
Murder bowl, was that it?
Something like that.
Oh, dear. Throne, they've not played that on Necromunda for hundreds of years, Blitz. I think the last time they did was the Brule Deluxe Speedball years of the sport. Do you think this listener could mean perhaps Screw Up's Murder Brawl instead?
Could be, Kree, could be.
Well, as for Screw Ups, we could be here all day talking about the crazy shit that happens in Murder Brawl. So, I'll do top three. No particular order, Fingers the Blade versus Orlok Bob and the infamous Power Sword Short.
Heh, they didn't call him Fingers after that, huh? Because they got cut off, Krieg, remember?
Yeah, I remember. There was also Wendell Van Dude, who was slipped over in the fecal matter of his opponent and impaled himself on the arena spikes.
Oh, I remember that. The cleanup crew weren't pleased about that one. While contestants soiling themselves isn't unusual, shitting yourself on purpose as a kind of biological mine is now officially banned.
And the time that we had a 20-fighter match on a giant rotating, tilting platform with spikes like in that old film. Problem was that one of the fighters used lightning claws and it fried the controls. It became more about who could hold on the longest to the platform as it span out of control. As far as screw-ups go, that one probably takes the gold.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty memorable. But the money we made that night, Krieg. No one else thought that that scrawny bastard Filthy Clegg would stand a chance. More creds for us, eh, brother?
Yeah, well, to be fair, he had the weight advantage because he was very small.
Well, exactly. I don't know why people didn't call that.
Maybe they thought upper body strength would help with holding onto the spikes.
Who knows,
buddy? I think that pretty much answers the question.
Okay, Blitzing Creek, I've got another question for you from a listener. I've got enough creds left for one last gamble in the big Cyber Mastiff Derby. Who's sure to win?
That's not really my thing, Blitz. You're more of a dog man than me. You want to take this one?
Yeah, sure. Well, given the tight restrictions on stims and the new regulations on cybernetic tuning, the trick is knowing which owner is likely to rub mustard on the dog's asshole before the race. Drop me a message privately and I'll give you some names.
I've got a question for Klaus. Klaus, what drove you to weaponry and security? Is there something your house keeps secret? Oh, right. So, do they mean security or do they mean secrecy? Because I don't know. Anyway, it says, is there something your house keeps secret? Also, please stop calling me.
Ooh. Oh, sorry. I forgot to swallow. Drove me? I'm a proud vet. My mouth's
wondering
all sticky.
Wondering how many of these mistakes we should actually leave in.
I'm a proud member of House Vansar. It's in my blood, as well as lethal levels of radiation. Now, being a weaponsmith and arms dealer is a tradition filled with honor. And call you, my dear sweetie, I'd fucking break you. And as for secrets, well, that's for me to know and you to find out. Yeah.
Klaus, I'm having some this feels more like a segment question than a one-off opportunity to speak to the cast kind of thing. I'm having some trouble with the ammo for my stub gun. My weapon is well oiled and I've checked the action thoroughly, but I keep having embarrassing misfires. Please help.
Oh, sweetie. Yes, certainly more of a segment question, but I'm feeling festive and charitable, so here we go. So a case of premature detonation, how embarrassing. I'd recommend paying more for ammo. The amount of street peddlers selling recased rounds is frankly quite frightening. It's your money, but if you don't want to go off before you have unholstered your weapon, then what's a few creds more?
Mm? Yeah, sound advice.
Well, absolutely.
Salacious Paul, Aries is at the back, right? Hey Paul, right, so we've got questions for you, mate. We've got, what is to be made of the stories of life outside the hive and in the ash wastes?
I hear many tales from outside of the hive and across the wastes, but a lot of the rumours, well, that's exactly what they are. There's not a lot out there except mutants, Christ psychers, ash wastes raising parties. Hidden cache is a priceless archaeotech. Oh, and the radiated dust storms.
Paul, also another question of of all the rumour mongers and information brokers we know of, are there any more connected than yourself? Do you feel that there is someone who knows more than you?
I'd like to meet them. Now, seriously, information is the lifeblood of Necromunda and arguably the most valuable commodity. And let's just say, I'm extremely solvent financially. But if you ask me again, I'll have to kill you.
Is that it with regards to other questions as well? Because I think we've got one more for you.
Oh, no, more questions. Just about how well connected I am.
Okay. So, in which case, then we've got, I hear the Hertzian Guild is getting into bother about their latest program, The Spire, about the Helmar family.
Oh, yes, I've heard about this. There's nothing wrong with some titillation, in my opinion. I don't see what the furore is all about. If you think infighting and incest is scandalous, then I could tell you stories that make your toes curl. I've got some incredibly vivid hololithics showing just how flexible the Archduke is for an 80-year-old. Right, I think we'll all have to have a look at them later, like, guys, because that sounds pretty fun, to be fair. But unfortunately, the listeners won't get to see those.
Yeah. Not unless they're on a top-tier Patreon. Right, so we've got we've got some questions for everyone. And we've also got... Cannabella, we've got some questions for you, my dear. Where is it?
Darling. What do we have?
What house makes the best food?
Oh, darling. By...
Yeah, by all means, feel free to reposition the mic. I know you've got to wade through everyone else.
Thank you. I would say by far House Ranlow. Their head chef makes absolutely divine, slag sea noodles. Well, they did. Of course, there's always House Cawdor. You can't beat their attention to detail when it comes to a good roast or BBQ.
That's because House Cawdor are like flames! And fire!
Indeed they do, darling.
Yeah, they do a great rat on a stick.
They've also got, my good-for-nothing Jews say that mould scrapings from Brussels condensers are bland and tasteless. Any tips?
Oh, darling, yes. Blight dough seeds ground with a pestle is about the closest thing you'll get to mustard seeds on planet. Mix that with some boiled sump grub and slather over your Brussels moulds. That should make them infinitely more palatable for Jews.
Cool. We've also got, can you tell us about your childhood and upbringing?
Well, what can I say, really? Life as a child was certainly much easier. My father tolerated my need for independence, and I suppose you could say that he was a merchant of sorts. I recall travelling with him when I was young and seeking parts of the hive that I would never dream of seeing. We had a private cook, and I remember spending many hours in her company and learning the finer points of making some delicious food. It was certainly a simpler time. I do sometimes wish I could have avoided some of the things I went through. Maybe I could have spared my family some heartache, especially my sister. Still, no point dwelling in such things, is there?
You have a sister?
I had a sister. As I said, childhood was a much simpler time.
Cool. All right, well, thank you, Cannabella. And that's alluding to a lot of things I want to ask questions about, but we need to move on. Ooh, who else have we got now? It's just Becky, isn't it? Oh. Question for you, Becky.
Baby! They got questions for me?
Actually, say question. We've got about three or four of them, actually. What's your worst experience with a gum?
Oh, that's easy. I would say any experience where you're on the wrong end of the weapon.
From that, then, we've got worst weapon to avoid at all costs.
Tried needleworms.
Well, yeah, there is that, I suppose.
Thread, needle, worms. I guess a lot of people would say that the heavy flamer, due to its extremely expensive base cost. And then the fact that you need a suspenser for it to make it more manageable. But honestly, I can't say I'm much of a fan of the rivet cannon. I mean, to be fair, it's a piece of industrial construction equipment that is not supposed to be used for shooting folk, but
people will pretty much try to turn anything into a weapon. Well, I guess that's a bit hypocritical. But, yeah.
Okay, yeah, it really is. Okay, of all the weapons available to us in the Underhive and beyond, what is your absolute favourite? Also, why did you never call me back?
Who sent this again?
Hang on a sec, let's have a look. I think that was Spamuel?
Is that the dude I blocked for leaving me them creepy messages with a heavy breathing?
Maybe.
Right. No. I stopped using that Voxbox a while ago to avoid unsolicited calls. I thought it'd be less hassle than hunting scummers down. Anyhow, I can't speak for the beyond as I've never stepped a foot outside the Underhive. But it's definitely not thread needleworms. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Laz Carbine? Light, peppy, fast. Plentiful. Is stylish. Van Saw design. I had one a few years ago. But someone stole it from me. You know, but such is the circle I have.
Yeah, it's fair. That tends to happen. I'm looking. This is another question. I'm looking for a flashy new gun to impress my mates down the drinking hole. Anything you'd recommend?
Photon flash grenades? Doesn't get flashier than that. okay.
I mean, it's not really a gun, though, is it?
No. But seriously, it's going to depend on your budget. I mean, if you can fork out for a las cannon, that never fails to impress. A rock saw for that feel me attitude. Or how about an enforcer sniper rifle for that? How did you get that reaction? Yeah, that's my answer.
Cool. Cheers, Becky.
No problem.
I've got some questions for everyone here as well. So, this is to everyone, so just chip in as and when. Who or how many people would you toss into the sump for a tall glass of cool off-world water?
Oh my. It's been such a long time since I've had pure water. Although you do acquire a taste for the kind in the Underhive. After a few years, that is.
What's it like?
I mean, do you know, it's ridiculously difficult to describe how different it really is. I don't think even the finest triple-filtered sump water even comes close to the refreshment one feels from pure water, especially, spring water. Oh my, I'm salivating at the mere thought of it.
Pure water is one thing, maybe, but off-world water, Xenos water, I'm not sure that would taste good.
Curious! I'd say maybe throw a few, gangs of scummers into the sump for a glass of water, maybe?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Oh, okay, yeah, this is a pretty straightforward one. Green or black olives?
What are olives?
Olives. They're a small fruit from trees, and they're part of the drupes family, believe it or not.
Hey, what now?
Nope, never heard of it. Olives? Nope, never heard of it.
Droops! That is a stone fruit! It's like a cherry!
Cherries? Oh, there's a flavour of corpse starch, isn't it?
Aye, it is, but it's not just a flavour. It's based on a fruit. Admittedly, I've never seen a real one.
Pitted green, quite the delicacy of hive and off-world, but honestly, salted mud fruit is pretty close.
I once loved a girl called Black Olive. Excuse me while I sit with my thoughts.
Definitely prefer the black olives. Oh, they are. They have such a depth of flavour.
Where's that little dog gone?
He's around here somewhere. Right, that's why you keep hearing little balks in the background occasionally. He keeps scraping at the floor. Okay, well, thank you, everyone, for all your questions there. And if you can just keep the noise down for a little bit whilst we're doing this last bit.
Okay, I will be quiet now.
I don't understand the meaning of quiet.
So, anyway, yeah, that's going to be our Christmas episode, really. We've just got a couple of thank yous. So for all the questions, it's Rob Davis, Bob Simmons. Who else we got there, Chris?
You son of a bitch. Nicholas Janikowski.
Cam Watts.
Spamuel Cadian.
XV, is it? Or something like that. Katie Sinclair and Samuel James Norrie Proctor. As for acknowledgements, we should really do that still, because even though this isn't a proper episode, we've had a couple of people sign up for Patreon. So that's James Wilkinson.
Ivy Gibson.
And Kevin Rapley. So cheers. Thanks very much, guys. Really appreciate it. Same bump for plies as to every other episode where we say about Patreon. It really does make a huge difference to us. So everyone who has joined that, thank you very much. We're not going to do the results of the competition that we just set for the massive prizes in the last episode, because this is just a short one. That's going to be at the end of January. We did mention that we would do it then. Just wrap up here. Okay, listeners, this is one final edit to the festive episode. Chris passed me something to stick in here. This is an audio file that we received from Damon Johnson all the way over in New Zealand, so we'll just stick this in quickly.
My name is Damon, and I'm coming at you long range with a monosight all the way from Windy Wellington down in New Zealand. I've got a very special guest with me tonight, especially for the show. So what's your name, mate, and where are you from?
Oh, my name is Lisa, and I'm originally from England, and now I live in New Zealand.
Yeah, and how old are you, young man?
I'm 6, and I'm the youngest Necromunda player.
Woohoo! And what's the best game in the world?
Necromunda.
And why?
Because you can defeat people and kill them.
Well, you can kill them, that's for sure. All right, and what's your favourite gang in Necromunda, and why?
Bansar,
that's because, a quick answer.
Because they've got the greatest technology in the whole game.
Wow, okay. And what's your best strategy for defeating your enemies?
Surrounding them and surround them, blast them with plasma, and stamp on their necks.
Ooh, stamp on their necks? Merciless. Okay, one last question for you now then. Just for the listeners out there, I'm sure they'll be very excited by this. If you were stuck in a collapsed dome, what would you do?
Follow the rats.
Good answer. Okay, well, Merry Christmas from us.
Merry Christmas.
And we'll catch you on the flip side.
Oh, bless him. 6 years old and a Necromunda player. How cool is that? Thank you very much, Damon, for sending that in. Okay, so that everyone can say goodbye to the listeners for this special festive episode. Thank you. So, right, everyone say goodbye.
Goodbye!
You've been listening to Sump City Radio. Join us next time for more hijinks in the hive and all things Necromunda. Remember to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. If you want to get more involved, join our growing Facebook community page. Just remember to answer all the damn questions. Do you want your letter read out on the show? Email us at sumpcityradio@gmail.com. And if your raids have been successful and you've plenty of creds to spare, why not toss a cred to your DJ over at our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/SumpCityRadio. Every little bit helps support the show. And thank you for listening. This is the one, the only, Sump City Radio.
Sump City Radio is a registered associate of the Hertzian Guild of Hive Primus and adheres to all communication laws decreed by Lord Helmar.